sometimes when we get it wrong, it's just kind of, nobody really minds, no one's really hurt, it's just a bit of a laugh, it's good, and it's good fun, and the buzzer goes, but sometimes when we get things wrong, it isn't a laugh, is it? It's serious, because people get hurt, or we get hurt, and you know, all of us have experiences, don't we? I'm sure if I just went round the whole church, each one of us could come up with an experience where we had got it pretty spectacularly wrong and got pretty hurt and mangled in the process. And it happens to us all. And the question is, how do you recover? And today we're going to think about this story that Lillian read for us, because it happened to this guy, Peter, who was the founder, the first leader of the Church of Jesus Christ in this earth. Now, I've called it Restoring Peter. Have you ever seen adverts for these companies that do restoration jobs on old photos like that? Yeah, you've seen them around. Sometimes they'll take your crumpled up old photo and just restore it to make it look like it used to look. I heard a story of one woman who went in and she wanted the picture of her husband restored, and he had a hat on. She said, "I never liked that hat. Could you airbrush the hat out?" And they said, "Well, certainly, madam. What side was his hair parted?" And she said, "Well, you'll find that out when you take his hat off." They make good TV programs as well about restoration, but you know, restoring old buildings, DIY SOS. You've seen these programs, and everybody loves it, you know, when they look at the before and then they do the big the rig reveal. Ah, this is what it looks like now, and everything's bright and sunshiny. It's really nice. And today's story is the story of a spectacular restoration job. Not on a building or a photo, but on a precious human being by the absolute master of restoration. And of course, his name was Peter. And we all know the story, don't we, that as Jesus was being taken away and tried, before that, he said, "You're all going to run away, you're all going to deny me." And Peter said, "No, I won't. These might, but I won't." And then Peter hung around in the courtyard, and Jesus has said, "Well, I tell you, Peter, before the cock crows three times, you will deny that you know me." And then we know the story, don't we, how he was warming himself around the fire, and someone says, "Wait a minute, you're one of those people, you belong with that bloke." He says, "No, I don't, not me." And three times he denied, and finally he's shouting and swearing at, "I tell you, I've never met him, I don't belong with him, has nothing to do with him." And then the cock crows, and Peter remembers, and he's absolutely devastated. I don't think that's too strong a word. People sometimes use that word that just to mean sort of upset, but I think Peter was absolutely, it's killed something inside him. And if you read the resurrection stories in the Gospels, you'll notice something. I mean, in all the other Gospel stories, there's one voice we keep hearing, isn't it? It's old Motormouth, isn't it? It's good old Peter. I think most Christians love Peter, because he kind of makes us feel good about ourselves. We think, "Oh, yeah, he's the bloke who spoke up and got it wrong, and there but for the grace of God go me." And there's a kind of vulnerability about him that we kind of like. But if you notice the resurrection stories, Peter says nothing. He didn't say a word. And I really think that Peter was kind of, I mean, like, he was happy that Jesus was alive, but he was a broken man. And I think mentally, he'd already written himself out of the group. He'd certainly written himself out of leadership. "You are Peter, and on this church I will build my church." "Yeah, right." I don't think so. How could Jesus possibly use someone like me, because I know what I've done? And do you know that that still happens? That still happens. It happens in all sorts of arenas of our life. It happens in leadership. It happens in love and relationships. Things are going on. It happens in churches, happens in work, happens in business. We're going along and things are good and things are good, and then a crisis hits and we crash and burn. And it's not just a little trip, it's a giant, spectacular crash. And we are devastated. And when that happens, we say, never again. Am I right? We say, I'm sorry, I just can't go there again. I can't go there again. It's not happening. Never again. And we start mentally rewriting our future, but whatever our future involves, it doesn't involve going back to that place where where we got so hurt. And Peter was a broken, broken man. And you know, love is never content to see the person who it loves remain broken. Should I say that again? Love is never, never content to see the person it loves remain broken. So Jesus wanted to do something about it. Now, in the very earliest account of the resurrection, we find that in Mark's Gospel. Mark 16, the shortest and most enigmatic of the Gospels, accounts of the resurrection. The women go down to the tomb and they see an angel, and the angel says, "He's not here, he's risen. Now you go and tell his disciples and Peter that he will meet you." And you know, I sometimes think that a lot of people have a view of God of someone who really is a rather like a rather disapproving head teacher. Well, I suppose if Peter came to me on bended knee, and I suppose if he crawled, and if he really apologized, and most importantly, you see, I'm not cross, I'm just disappointed. Most importantly, if he shows he's really learned something out of this experience, I suppose then I might forgive him. I think a lot of us have a mental image that God really is something like that. The truth is, God is nothing like that whatsoever. God really isn't like that at all. He says, none of that. You tell those disciples, you tell that Peter, I'm coming to get him. You tell Peter he's in. He's part of this group and I want to meet him. Tell him. Make sure. And that is grace. That's grace. So let's get into the story. In fact, we have to go a couple of verses back before we enter the story. John chapter 20 ends like this. The disciples saw Jesus do many other miraculous signs, in addition to the ones recorded in this book, but these are written so that you may continue to believe that Jesus is the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing in him, you will have life by the power of his name. Now, what does that say to you? It says, the end. Roll the credits. It's time. You know, bring on the theme music. The end. And yet, there's this other chapter. There's this extra ending. We can't leave it there. There's another story. And here's how it starts. It's up in Galilee. And Peter and the other gang are around. And Peter says, this is the first thing he says that we hear him say anyway after the resurrection, I'm going fishing. Wow. You hear that? He was a fisherman. So he says, I'm going fishing. What he's saying is, I'm going back. I'm going back to what I do. I'm going back to what I know. You guys, I mean, you know, I'm sure there's a mission ahead, fantastic days ahead, happy days. I'll be cheering you on. Yeah, go guys. But I'm going back because I failed and I am a failure. So I'm going fishing. Fantastic, isn't it? Now, crashes do that to you. Crashes do that to you. You retreat to the place where you're comfortable. You retreat to the place where you felt competent. And thank God for friends, eh? I tell you what, isn't it wonderful to have a real friend? Thank God for our friends. Because his friends said, well, Pete, we'll go with you, shall we? Come on, mate. Let's go out. All right, you want to go fishing? Let's go fishing together. So they go out, and you know the story. They fish all night, chuck the boat, bring it in, and all night, and they fish, and they fish, and they fish, and they catch nothing. Not even a boot. They catch nothing. I'd like to invite you to pause a moment there. Try and get yourself inside Peter's head. What do you think his inner dialogue is right now? What do you think Peter is saying to himself right now? He's gone back to the place where he last felt competent. And he's failed at that too. He's caught nothing. What is he saying to himself? Anyone like to suggest?
I'm no good.
Pardon?
I'm no good.
I'm no good. Absolutely. In three simple words, you've hit it right on the head. I'm no good. That's what he was thinking. That's what he was feeling. I'm just convinced of it. And then they sort of think, oh, well, blooming heck, we better just go back to the shore, I suppose. Get on with our lives. And then they see this chap on the shore, and it's a bit misty, and they look and don't know who it is. And he says, hey guys, you caught anything?
No.
I got an idea. Why don't you chuck the nets over on the other side? Yeah, what? Yeah, you chuck them over on the other side. Go on. Humour me. So they chuck it over. And it's groaning with fish. And they say, I think it's the Lord.
Well, duh.
You know how couples sometimes have our song? Our song, you know, the one that was playing when we got engaged or when we first met or something. Well, for Peter, this was our miracle. There we are. This was his calling story. Jesus was deliberately stirring up memories, pre-crash memories. He's deliberately stirring up the memories of happy days when things were okay. And Peter was himself. Brilliant, isn't it? Isn't this genius? And the guys draw in the nets, but Peter is... He can't wait. He's just got to get out and he's got to go and meet Jesus. And Jesus is standing on the shore and he's drawing in his net. And there is one precious fish in that net. Don't you love Jesus? Isn't he great? Isn't he brilliant? Now, have any of you have ever had to face an awkward interview? You know, let's be honest here. Has anybody ever sat outside the head teacher's office? Uh-huh. One or two. Oh, well, one honest person has stuck their sucker hat. Oh, there's two. Fantastic. Can I get a witness? Okay. You know, you've got an awkward interview and you're feeling your tummy's going like this. And you know, you're not really feeling very at your ease. And I think Peter knows that he and Jesus are going to have a little chat. Don't you? What does Jesus do to prepare him for that? He gets the risen Lord, the Lord who's conquered life and death and life. He gets down on the beach and he grabs some bits of wood and he builds a little beach fire and gets some fish from somewhere, some bread from somewhere, and he prepares a little barbecue. What an idyllic scene. Can you imagine that? What? I can't imagine anything very much nicer than that, actually. Just the sea's lapping in, and it's the early morning, and you're hungry, and there's this beautiful smell of fish cooking on an open fire. Doesn't it sound fantastic? Man, I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. And he puts everyone at their ease. Because that's what Jesus is like. It really is what he's like. And then it's time for the chat. So he says, Pete, come on, let's go for a little walk. Now what are the possible questions? What are the questions that we would ask? What are the questions that Pete might have asked himself? Why did you do it? How could you? Can I ever trust you again? What have you learned out of this situation? None of that. One question. Do you love me? Peter, do you love me? This is the question. It's always the question. And Jesus knew the answer, but Peter didn't. Peter didn't know. I said, how can I say yes to that? You see, three times I had the opportunity to say it when it really mattered. And three times I failed. In fact, vehemently I said no, just to save my own wretched skin. And so three times Jesus draws it out. Do you love me, Peter? Say it. Say it. Say it. Yes, I love you. You love me? Yes, I love you. You love me? Third time. Lord, you know everything. You know I love you. And three times Jesus says, I know. I know. And I got a place for you. And I got vital work for you to do. You might not believe in you, but I do. You're saying, oh, I can't go there, but I know you can. You know, the days are coming when I won't be physically here. Will be. Would you help me? There are lambs out there who need you, who you are uniquely able to reach. There are other failures who need to know that failure is not the end of the road. Oh yeah. And by the way, your time will come. You will get your chance, Peter, and I know you're going to rise to it. I know you're going to do it this time. But in the meantime, I need you, pal. Will you feed my sheep? What? What do you mean feed your sheep? What have I got to feed them? What have I got to feed them? He says, I tell you what, you feed them grace. You feed them the grace that I'm giving to you right now. Now, away on our retreat, I picked up this book that I hadn't read for ages. It's by Philip Yancey. Has anybody read this book? Isn't it fantastic? Ah, I tell you what, I'm rereading it and lapping it up. Get that book and read it. It's brilliant. What's so amazing about grace? Let me give you a little quote. Grace is indeed amazing. It contains the essence of the gospel as a drop of water can contain the image of the sun. The world thirsts for grace in ways it doesn't even recognize. The world runs by ungrace. Everything depends on what I do. Jesus' kingdom calls us to another way. He says, Peter, will you feed them grace? Feed them what I'm giving you. Grace, you see, is what the church has to offer the world. Grace is what the church has to offer the world. And the tragedy is that a lot of the time, Christians and the church have forgotten grace and gone back to the ways of ungrace. And we do this in two ways. First of all, we miss grace by forgetting to show it to others. You know who this is? This is Ned Flanders' wife. Yeah? No. What am I? The Simpsons. Yeah. Homer Simpson, his next door neighbor, is an evangelical Christian. And they're always coming out. They put in the words of what people see and feel from the church. I don't judge Homer or Marge. That's for a vengeful God to do. We've just been away to Christian camp to learn how to be more judgmental. You know? Philip Yancey says he once went around asking, when I say the word evangelical Christian, what comes to your mind? He says, not once did anybody say anything whatsoever about grace. And there are churches where we fail to offer grace even to each other, and then we still presume that we've got the moral high ground to take the lead in society and show them what's right and wrong, and we forget to show grace to others. Friends, this isn't right. The church should be the place where people who've messed up big time find grace. They find acceptance and love and warmth that says, I don't mind what you've done. It's wrong, but I know, you know. You don't need me to tell you that's wrong. But we love you anyway. We love you. We just accept you exactly as you are. We love you. We want you here. The church has got to become that place of grace. The second way that we miss grace is even more tragic. We forget grace by forgetting to receive it for ourselves. There are Christians all over the world who live almost permanently in ungrace and under a cloud of never quite acknowledged shame. It doesn't matter how many Christian hymns we sing and songs we say about how wonderful it is to be forgiven, we actually don't really believe it because we live under a cloud of shame. Shame is the trouble with shame is it masquerades as humility. It pretends, through it, the devil pretends that we're being humble. And it claims to be the thing that will control our sinful pride. Oh, we've got to stop ourselves getting too above ourselves, haven't we? Yes. But actually, it is one of the most pernicious weapons the devil has, shame. And by using this weapon, he stops us from knowing our God. And he says, don't you even try, because God could never use you. Do you think God is... you? And there's like this little judge on our shoulder all the time is going, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? I'm no good. And there are Christians who miss the truth, which is that God, by his grace, just wants to wash that stuff away. Because why would you live in shame when I died to take it away from you? We've got to let God's grace gently wash away that shame, and we've got to keep at it again and again, day after day after day. Now, this sermon started over a year ago in Swanbank Church in Burslem. It was Good Friday and we were singing this song, and this line came up: no guilt in life, no fear in death, this is the power of Christ in me. And I was singing away and I thought, wow, but actually I live a lot of my life afraid of reaching the end of it and having Jesus say, well, you can come in, but I'm disappointed. I'm disappointed. Living under shame. This is the power of Christ in me. Hallelujah. And it's like God said, how? Stop. Listen. Listen to what you're singing, mate. Listen. Just stop and start feeding on grace. Feed on grace. And then feed God's lambs with grace. Now, I don't know where you're at this morning. I don't know you. I'm sure you're lovely people. But I don't know who you are, what your lives are like, what especially what your inner lives are like. I wouldn't mind betting money. Ooh, how naughty. That there's people here who have that little thing on their shoulder going, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? I wouldn't mind betting that there are people here who have failed at something and thought, I can't go there again. I wouldn't mind betting that there are people who've written themselves off from doing anything more than making the tea. Not that making the tea is not a wonderful thing to do. I love making the tea. Because I think I can't go there. Why would God use someone like me? I wouldn't mind betting large sums that there's quite a number who think, what have I got to offer anyone? The answer is, you have got grace. You've got the experience of God's love that loves and loves and loves and loves and loves and loves and loves you. Accepts you and picks you up and says, it doesn't matter, I love you anyway. You've got that to share with other people. So folks, it's about time we started doing it, isn't it? It's about time we started believing it. So would you like to join me in prayer, and then we'll sing our last song. And